Fellowship and VIC stands for Vaccine Information Coalition. You're listening to Progressive Radio Network, the most listened to commercial-free and truth radio program in the world. My name is Renee, and the title of our show is What in the Cell is Going On? We're on every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern, which can be accessed live on the front page of prn.fm or later on the front page of our vacinfo.org website. We thank this radio station for allowing us to have any questions you may have answered on next week's show. The voicemail line's 862-800-6805. Just leave your name, your question, and let them know it's for our show. Our guest today is another mom on a mission that's had to learn the hardest way possible about the dangers of vaccinating her children. She's been fighting this fight for as long as many of us have and has such credentials, so I'm going to let her introduce herself and share her story. Thank you dearly for joining us today, and welcome, Laura Hayes.
Thank you, Renee. I appreciate this opportunity to share what I've learned, as you said, the very, very hard way over the past 25 years.
Yes, it's been going on for a long time, unfortunately. My baby girl was, 95 when she was diagnosed with vaccine injury, of course, by me. By me. Mm-hmm. Labeled autistic, of course. But why don't you share with the audience what happened with you? I know it's more than just one child, correct?
Right. So, my contention is that if you've been vaccinated, you've been vaccine injured. No one escapes vaccine harm. No one is going to have these categories of substances, from poisons to carcinogens to heavy metals to toxins and neurotoxins, injected into their bodies, into closed systems, and not suffer harm. So we are harming anyone who is being injected with these products. But in my case, we have three children who were born in 92, 94, and 96, and they were all vaccinated. Our first child was vaccinated through age 5. Our most severely vaccine-injured child, Ryan, who was born in 1994, was vaccinated from birth through age 2, and our youngest child, born in 96, received vaccines through 18 months. So he received fewer than his brother and sister. But the one who suffered the worst was Ryan, and he's the one whom I discuss publicly. He was severely and permanently disabled by his, quote, routine childhood vaccinations. He suffered catastrophic brain injury, his nervous system was derailed, his immune system was devastated. There was no part of his body that did not suffer from these vaccines. He, after each set of vaccinations, he would either develop unusual, odd behaviors or lose previously acquired skills or some combination of both. Now, I wasn't putting it together that it was the vaccines causing these effects, because I'd already been indoctrinated to believe that vaccines were safe and effective, so I wasn't thinking that those could be responsible for these strange events going on in him. Sometimes things were rather immediate. After his very first set of vaccines at age 2 months, Ryan immediately stopped crying. That was the end of Ryan crying. So that was unusual, and that was immediate. Other things would be, I think, a week or two or three after the development of hysterical laughing in the middle of the night after his six-month vaccines. At the same time, he started to develop a strange odor to his breath, which, when I brought it up with the doctor at his nine-month appointment, she, instead of being listening to my concern and even bending over and smelling my child's breath, she attacked my mothering. She asked me if he was getting into my alcohol supply, because I had mentioned the strange odor. The only thing I could kind of compare it to was that of some type of an alcohol aroma. And so she looked at me. I have a child who's just crawling, who certainly couldn't open a wine bottle or open a can of beer or open the fridge to get the can of beer, or open the pantry to get into the bottle of wine. She asked me if he was getting into my alcohol supply. Mm-mm. And I looked at her in disbelief after such an inane comment, and I said, no, we rarely even have alcohol on the premises, and he's only crawling. He couldn't possibly reach the alcohol, open it, hold such a big thing and consume it. So that's not the issue. But she literally never even bent over to smell his breath. And in hindsight, I know that was probably symptomatic of a yeast overgrowth, which is very common in vaccine-injured children. That's just one example. When he wasn't speaking by 18 months at all, I asked her about that, and she looked at me and asked me if I ever sat on the floor and played with him. I'm a stay-at-home mom. Right next to me was my very precocious, very verbal 3-year-old daughter. So clearly, I was able to teach her to speak, and asked me basically if I was spending any time with this child of mine. At the same appointment, 18 months, she did some type of a developmental test where she asked him to walk across the room and then walk on his tiptoes and do various and sundry things involving receptive language. Well, Ryan couldn't do any of them. Ryan didn't even realize he was being spoken to. So she then looked at me and attacked both Ryan and me and said, "Is he always this naughty?" And I said, "Ryan's never naughty. We're concerned that he's too good." What she didn't realize is that he didn't even realize he was being addressed. He didn't understand language. And that's what I'd already brought up with her. I was concerned he wasn't speaking. So she wasn't listening to any of my concerns. And she went forward that day and gave him a slew of vaccines from which he nearly died. That his worst set of vaccine reactions was after his 18-month vaccinations. He went home and he was like a limp rag doll in his crib for almost 2 weeks. I called consecutively, starting that day, for 10 business days, called her office and said, "Something's not right. He's so lethargic. He doesn't want to eat or drink. He's really not awake much, if at all. Something's not right." And I called every day, and the doctor, I don't think she ever even was given my messages. She clearly trained her staff that anything that happened in the first 2 weeks post-vaccination is considered a normal vaccine reaction, because on the 10th day that I called, the nurse actually yelled at me on the phone and said that to me. She said, "Mrs. Hayes, do not call back until day 15. Anything that happens in the first 2 weeks post-vaccination is considered a normal vaccine reaction." So there was my child probably suffering from brain inflammation known as encephalitis, which then turned into encephalopathy, permanent brain damage. So it's just these doctors don't give any informed consent prior to the vaccinations. You walk in and the nurse has the tray of shots, and she injects your child without even telling you what she's injecting them with, and then the doctor lazes in about 15 minutes later, and basically all they are really doing, those are vaccination appointments. They weigh your child, measure them, shoot them up. The doctor comes in and says, "Oh, looks good, fine, fine, fine," and even when you bring up problems, you know, in my case, she just attacked my mothering. "Is he getting into your alcohol? Do you ever sit and play with him? Is he always this naughty?" Comments like that instead of, "Whoa, we may have a problem here. Let's think about what might be causing this. This isn't typical development. This isn't normal." So we shouldn't be surprised when they say that, "Oh, there aren't that many adverse vaccine reactions reported." Doctors don't look for them. They don't listen when parents come in and report them. They are taught to pretty much ignore, dismiss, deny, and demean any type of adverse vaccine reactions reported to them. They're not required by law to report them to the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. Ryan's were never reported to VAERS by her. And by the time I even found out about VAERS and the VICP, the 3-year statute of limitations to file a claim had passed. So it's no surprise that only 1 to 10% of adverse vaccine reactions is even reported, and I would bet money it's less than 1%. And of those people that actually go through the paperwork of filing a claim, when you're already caring for a child who's been permanently and severely disabled by vaccines, you are busy 24/7, 365. You don't typically have time to engage in what's going to be a 7 to 10-year lawsuit across the country in D.C., which is basically a government-run and rigged kangaroo court where less than one-third of those who do decide to go that route and make that commitment are even victorious. And if you can call that a victory, you're basically begging for money to help care for your permanently vaccine-injured child, or getting a death settlement of $250,000. So when your child is killed by vaccines, there's a cap on that of $250,000. But even with all of that said, the fact that doctors don't report, many don't even know about VAERS or the VICP, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, there's a three-year statute of limitations. Less than one-third of those who do file a claim, you know, are victorious. Even with that, the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program has paid out over $4 billion to date. So vaccine injuries are real. I argue every day that they are not rare at all. As I said, you cannot be injected time and again, and now the injections are at such regular and frequent intervals for our children every couple months. You can't inject a tiny developing human being now beginning in utero with these categories of substances, poisons, toxins, neurotoxins, metals, and not disrupt and derail development and health. So it's the tip of the iceberg when we hear that $4 billion amount. I can't even extrapolate what it should be well into the trillions if they actually did have to compensate properly for vaccine injury and vaccine-induced death. And that's one reason why they won't do the comparison study between vaccinated and unvaccinated. It's why they are trying to vaccinate now in utero. They don't want there to even be any evidence. If a child is born already vaccine injured, they're that less likely. It just helps in their cover-up of what they've done and what they continue to do. They don't want to be on the hook for these trillions of dollars that should be paid out for the damages and the care that is then required to take care of so many vaccine-injured individuals. So that's how I got into this. It was connecting the dots, finally, of what happened to my own children, especially Ryan, and talking to other parents, and then going back over his baby book and seeing the correlation with the timing of his vaccinations and the development of his symptoms and learning more about mercury poisoning, which he had all the symptoms of. Ryan, between 0 and age 18 months, had a minimum of 237.5 micrograms of mercury. That is thousands upon thousands upon thousands of times more than is permitted in drinking water. And this was injected into a teeny tiny baby in the prime of their development, in his development. So he was very mercury poisoned, had all the symptoms, and that was just one of the many toxic and neurotoxic ingredients he was injected with. There was also aluminum. I don't even know the amounts for that he was injected with at that time. I don't have all the package inserts because I wasn't given them. I wasn't given anything prior to my children's vaccination, so there was no informed consent. And formaldehyde, which I always encourage people, read the MSDS for formaldehyde. That stands for the Material Safety Data Sheet. Read about how incredibly dangerous and fatal formaldehyde is and the precautions that must be taken if one works with formaldehyde. And then note that it's in almost every vaccine being injected into our children. So we have poisons, we have toxins, we have neurotoxins, things that inflame and damage the brain. We have things that we know cause cancer. We have known carcinogens are contained in the vaccines. We have things known and proven to impair fertility and cause sterility in the vaccines. This is insanity. We are injecting our offspring, our future, with things. How is that going to help their health? How is that going to protect, maintain, or enhance their health to inject them with categories of substances that if anyone other than a doctor, nurse, or pharmacist injected into someone, they'd be arrested? If you look at the categories that I just mentioned, those categories of substances that are injected, if you were to inject that into someone else, you would be arrested. Those things are potentially fatal. Even if you gave them to someone to drink, if you put those ingredients, those categories of substances in a baby's bottle and then fed them to that baby and a parent found out, you'd be arrested. And even if it was ingested, the child would actually have a better chance of eliminating all of those poisons and toxins versus when they are injected into a closed system. So I just always encourage parents to use your common sense. Look at the list of ingredients. Go to vaccinesafety.edu, which has a link to every single vaccine package insert. Pick three, any three. It doesn't matter which three. They're all horrific. Read the ingredients. Read the absolutely ludicrous testing that was done on them, which does not adhere to the scientific gold standard for testing whatsoever. They vaccine, quote, safety studies do not use double-blind placebo-controlled studies. They often don't have control groups. They don't use placebos. They use other vaccines as the control or adjuvants which cause adverse reactions, including death in and of themselves, or a combination of vaccines and adjuvants. Those are not placebos. Those are not proper controls. Just read about how short some of these studies are. Some are as little as 4 days long, when even the vaccine injury table admits that some vaccine reactions will take up to a year to manifest. And we know, those of us who've studied this for years now, know that some things will take longer. Cancers, type 1 diabetes, these things might not show up for a few years. But we should be asking, why do we now have 1 in 250 kids with type 1 diabetes? Why do we have 1 in 20 with seizure disorder? Why do we have 1 in 12 with asthma, 1 in 9 with food allergies? And why do we have so many child oncology units throughout the country? There's now one pretty much in every hospital. That's not normal. Childhood is supposed to be a time of incredible health and vitality. Yet our children, more than half of them, are chronically ill. They have some form of a chronic illness and or a developmental disability, and the majority is on meds. Children should not be on pharmaceuticals. We're now doctors should be put in jail. We now have, you know, toddlers being given pharmaceuticals for things like ADHD. Giving toddlers mind-bending, mind-altering drugs, how is that even legal? It's certainly not ethical. So I think I've gone well above and beyond how I got into this, but that's how it started. You start learning, you connect the dots of what happened to your own child, you talk to other parents, you start doing your own research, which really doesn't even take very long. Like I said, go read a few package inserts to vaccines, and that's about all the education you will need to see that these products are not tested properly, they're not approved ethically, they contain ingredients that if anyone else were to inject them into your baby, they'd go to jail. So, and we have the proof in the pudding. American children have never been sicker or more disabled or succumbing to cancer and dying of SIDS, something that didn't even exist before the advent of using vaccines in our children here in America. We just have to take a look at our children. Look at the school nurses' offices. They look like pharmacies. Look at the special ed classrooms that grow every single year and are breaking the budgets of school districts across our country and across the world. We shouldn't have the number of special ed students in most of our districts has approached the 24, 25, 26% mark. Mm. How is that sustainable to have 1 in 4 kids in our country needing help for more than half of their school day? That's what an IEP, that's what triggers an IEP, an individualized education plan. When you need help with more than 50% of your day and or you have some type of an illness that is life-threatening and might need medications administered at school. So something's not right. The earliest and most egregious assault on our children is vaccinations. There are other things poisoning our children, for sure. Pesticides, herbicides, genetically modified food, toxic cleaners used everywhere, stuff being sprayed down on us from above. There are many ways in which we're being poisoned without our consent. But vaccines are one of the earliest and most egregious ways, and ones for which we're losing our right to refuse. So I'm sure we're going to talk about that today, the mandating of vaccinations.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's somebody's comment on a couple of things. You know, this is how they get away with it, because it's not usually, or not always, should I say, SIDS obviously is an immediate reaction, as well as shaken baby syndrome they're accusing parents of. But most of the injuries, like autism or diabetes or whatever, it's delayed onset, so they don't connect the dots. And we just blindly trust these doctors, thinking they're doing the best for our children. They're, you know, when I was a little girl, I'm 54, I went to a family doctor. Pediatricians are vaccine clinics, like you said. they wouldn't have a job without vaccinating, you know?
Well, and I always, I encourage parents to ask. We've been trained now to go to these, quote, well baby visits. All three of my children left their well baby visits never to be fully well again. So these well baby visits are nothing other than vaccination appointments. They weigh your kid, they measure, they shoot them up, the doctor comes in, looks at the chart, says, great, we'll see you in 2 more months, we'll repeat this whole thing. You'll come in, we'll weigh you, we'll weigh your baby, measure your baby, and shoot them up again. And basically, parents, you can tell if your children are growing. If they're outgrowing their diapers and their clothing, they're growing. If you have any concerns, you can always call, like you said, a family doctor. You can see a doctor, but taking them in when they're not sick, how did we ever get brainwashed into doing that? And there's a great book by the late Dr. Robert Mendelsohn called How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor. And he criticizes and scoffs at the notion of these well baby visits and says, don't do it. And don't even take your child in when they start to get ill. You need to wait and watch. Most things will, you can take care of your child at home. You don't need to rush to the doctor's office. And then he gives great advice about the few rare times where you might want to take your child in. But it's a great book. We need to go back and learn these truths and this wisdom that we used to learn from our moms and grandmas. But now we've been so indoctrinated that we need an expert for everything, including medical care, that we need to listen to what the doctor says. No, no, no. We have wonderful God-given maternal instincts. We have wisdom that we can learn from our mothers and grandmothers about when your child has a fever, you know, let it run. We have temperatures, we get fevers for a reason, and make sure they're resting and give them liquids and different vitamins for different infections they might get during childhood and what a nutrient-dense diet looks like and the importance of breastfeeding and the importance of getting out in the sun and exercise and not sitting in front of electronics. We have lost these very common sense means, these risk-free means of protecting, maintaining, and enhancing our children's health. From hand washing to breastfeeding to non-packaged, non-tainted foods, you know, foods that are whole foods that are grown organically without poison sprayed on them. We've just lost what it is that health is really all about. We've been indoctrinated to believe that health comes through a pill, needle, or spray, and that just couldn't be further from the truth. So we need to go back to the basics. We need to think about basic science. Think about when we were little and our mothers wouldn't let us play with thermometers because if we broke them, the mercury that came out was dangerous. Well, now we're injecting our children with absolutely insane, potentially fatal levels of mercury in addition to other metals that are being found in the vaccines. Of course, there's aluminum admitted to be in the majority of today's vaccines. And that's also terrible, toxic and neurotoxic, and synergistically so when paired with the mercury that is still in the vaccines, despite what people are told. And then all types of other metals are being found. There's an Italian study that has found that there are other metals like stainless steel, lead, tungsten, barium. I can't even remember the other ones, but there's quite a listing, and none is listed on the ingredients list. So these products are in there, either by accident or part of the manufacturing process, doesn't matter. The fact is that they're in there. They're not needed by the human body. They may persist in the human body once injected and wreak havoc.
And that's right. And the combination of the mercury with the formaldehyde and the aluminum and the nagalase and the glyphosate, which is Roundup, pesticides.
Yep.
I mean, the combination, these are all neurotoxins that are combined, and we have no idea the amounts, because if the nurse who's injecting the baby doesn't success that vial, like with my friend Linda, her son got the pure silver injected into him, because heavy metals obviously are heavy. So he's severely autistic. He's in his 20s now. But she saw the silver going through the needle and grabbed the nurse's arm to stop her, but she had already pulled it and injected him. So right. It's so just insane what we're letting them do to our
babies. Yeah, these multi-dose vials. So people are unaware, a multi-dose vial, and that's what the vast majority, probably 95% of flu vaccines given in our country are from multi-dose vials. That's 10 doses in one vial. And that vial is filled with 25 micrograms of mercury per dose. So in the vial is 250 micrograms of mercury, if the label is even right. Often the label isn't right, so there could be double that amount. No one's checking. There's no oversight of the vaccine industry. Don't fool yourself. So there is all this mercury in these multi-dose vials, and then the nurse has got to be diligent in vigorously shaking it for a certain amount of time to supposedly equally distribute that neurotoxin mercury that's in the vial. Well, I remember when I used to go into my kids' appointments, who knows how long the silver tray with the vaccines had been sitting there. She didn't shake them. She'd just grab one, jab them, grab the next. There was no vigorous shaking for whatever it's supposed to be, 20, 30 seconds. So if your kid got the first or the last dose in a vial that hadn't been shaken well, they were going to get the lion's share of the mercury in that multi-dose vial. So when I said Ryan received a minimum of 237.5 micrograms, I say minimum because he might have gotten more if he was that first or last dose. We don't know if we do know that the labels are not even accurate. There was a group, HAPI, H-A-P-I, Health and Advocacy in the Public Interest, that years ago did an independent testing of many vaccines to test the amounts of mercury and aluminum in them. And the results clearly showed that what was on the vaccine label was not accurate. In most cases, the amounts of those two metals were in excess of what was printed on the label. So we can't trust these manufacturers. There is little to no oversight, and many of our vaccines are not even made in our own country. So we hear rumors, and that some, maybe many, are made in China. And I want to tell people about the oversight in China with regard to pharmaceutical products. It is said that, and I do have a source for this, it's listed in my Why Is This Legal presentation, that oversight in China, that we are allowed over there, FDA regulators are allowed over there once every 14 years to monitor pharmaceutical productions over there, including vaccinations. So once every 14 years, and I heard at one point that they weren't even allowed on the premises, that someone from the company would meet them outside a locked gate. In any event, 14 years, every 14 years, we're monitoring, supposedly, pharmaceutical products that we purchase from China. Does that sound okay? Does that sound like a rigorously monitored supply chain of stuff that's being injected to our babies? And why are we injecting babies? Let's even take it back a step further to the basics. If you pinched my baby, I would probably harm you if you did it on purpose. But here we are with vaccination, somehow, again, indoctrinated, brainwashed, coerced into participating in the manhandling and holding down and barbaric practice of injecting them. So it takes, usually two adults to hold down a screaming baby or toddler, sometimes more, so that they can be jabbed painfully in one, two, three, or all four limbs with multiple syringes, sometimes up to eight if it's a catch-up appointment. That would be two per limb. And they're screaming. They're red-faced. And what is the impact of that? Well, Forrest Moretti has written an excellent book called Crooked, Man-Made Diseases Explained. And in it, he actually goes over the very sex-specific responses, male and female, to such incredible levels of stress when you're being held down and something is done against your will and you can't fight back. And females have one response and males have another. And that actually impacts how those vaccine ingredients are utilized and stored in your body and the different ways that males and females will be harmed by the ingredients in vaccines just due to their male-female specific responses. And it's horrifying. It will make you cry to read that book and see just how barbaric and how dangerous it is when we hold down people, including babies and toddlers are people, when they are held down against their will and something painful and horrific is done to them. So people should read that book and just think, why would we be participants in that. In my another one of my presentations called Vaccines, What Is There to Be Pro About?, I review a little bit. If you were to walk by my house and peek in my dining room window and see my husband and me holding down one of our children, be they an infant, a toddler, a preschooler, if you saw us holding down our child who is kicking and screaming and then painfully jabbing them with these syringes, and then you found out what the ingredients in those syringes were, ingredients, you know, viruses and retroviruses of both human and animal origin, fetal human tissue from aborted babies, poisons like formaldehyde, antibiotics not needed due to illness, heavy metals like aluminum, a dangerous adjuvant, and another metal which is synergistically neurotoxic with mercury, polysorbate 80, which is an emulsifier, which helps all those ingredients cross through cell walls and go across the blood-brain barrier so that they will end up in the brain, phenol, antifreeze, sometimes glass shards. I could go on and on with the ingredients that are listed and not listed in vaccines, and not listed but have been discovered. And I should also mention that vaccine ingredients are not required by law to be listed. They can be hidden under the guise of trade secrets or intellectual property. So if you knew, if you then were shown a list of the ingredients of what you saw my husband and me painfully, roughly jabbing into our children's limbs as we're manhandling and holding them down, you would whip out your cell phone if you saw that through our dining room window and call the cops. Meanwhile, every minute of every day across the world, that same thing is actually being done in doctors' offices. It's just being performed by those wearing white coats. Why do we give people wearing white coats permission to do that to our babies? Why do we give them that power? Why do we think that they are so much smarter than we are? They are not. Doctors will admit that in medical school, they are given, out of 4 years, they're given about two hours on vaccine training. And it's mostly teaching them the CDC-recommended schedule, because they've got to learn how to give 70 doses from birth through age 18 of 16 different vaccines, and that's something that's constantly changing and expanding. What age you give the recommended vaccines, and which limb, how deep, how to refrigerate, how to store. I mean, there's so much to learn about these 70 recommended doses of vaccines that is all they are taught. And they're also taught, don't question this, or you will be ostracized. There is no questioning the administration of 70 doses of vaccines, as though there's any medical procedure, product, or treatment that should be universally recommended and not done on an individual basis. But that's what they're taught. They're not taught that these vaccines have horrible ingredients. They're not taught that these vaccines can cause chronic illness, can cause permanent sterility, can cause developmental disabilities, can cause blindness, deafness, can cause SIDS, can cause anaphylactic reactions, peanut allergies, death. They're not taught any of that. They're not taught about VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and how to report an adverse event if one of their patients should have one. They're not taught, by the way, if one of your patients does have an adverse event, you should probably stop using that product altogether until we can investigate further. They're not taught how to file claims on behalf of their patients with VAERS or with the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. They're not taught about the vaccine injury table that's used in the kangaroo court, known as vaccine court, that is a fraction of what should be on that vaccine injury table. They're not taught any of that. They're not taught to read carefully through each and every vaccine package insert, and especially read those contraindications. If our pediatrician had read that, just based on my and my husband's personal and family health histories, none of our kids should have been vaccinated. We would have met many of the contraindications to vaccination. So doctors aren't taught any of that. So when you go in and you think that doctor wearing his little stethoscope and white coat is oh so smart and oh so vaccine educated, he's not. And worse, he's actually already been indoctrinated that if you question vaccines, you will be ostracized from the other doctors in your practice. You might be fired. You might be wakefielded, where you'll be taken to task in the press for daring to question or daring to scrutinize or daring to report what you're seeing in your patients. They are taught to be silent about vaccines, to just do as they're told. And let's think about a time in history that reminds us of, where you are witnessing terrible things being done, but you are told to be silent, put your head down, and keep doing what you're doing or pay a price. And that's what's happening. That's what's going on here. And people, really, I encourage them to do their own education. Think about why it is they defer to doctors as these experts. Why do you think a pediatrician? Ask them questions about vaccines. They get so defensive. They have no answers because they know nothing. They know nothing other than to just say, you get these or I'm kicking you out of my practice. Well, why would you want someone like that being your doctor anyway? If they don't want to recognize you, mom, you, dad, as the authority on your child and the one who gets to make any and all decisions regarding your child, including medical and health care decisions. Why have we given up that authority, that God-given right, that constitutionally guaranteed right, that fundamental human right to determine what we allow or don't allow into our own body and that of our child's? We need to reclaim that right. We need to demand it. We need to stop thinking that doctors are these oh-so-smart, holier-than-thou people. There are some very good, very smart, very intelligent, very ethical doctors, and there are some very awful ones, and there are some very willfully ignorant ones, and that includes most pediatricians, and certainly, I would argue, any vaccinating pediatrician. The information is out there in spades, and as I said, we're seeing the evidence of vaccinations in our children. It is willful ignorance to continue to inject little human beings with the categories of substances I've already mentioned for which it should be criminal to inject in another human being. So it's willful ignorance by pediatricians who refuse to educate themselves. It's prideful arrogance. We're smart. You're not, little dumb mom. And it's corruption. They are getting, you know, we know that Blue Cross Blue Shield compensates pediatricians for exceedingly high vaccination rates. And so that is why they kick out patients from their practices. They don't want to lose those bonuses that you get from vaccinating your patients. And that's their bread and butter, as I said. Why would you take your child to the doctor if they're not sick? We've been trained to do it for these, quote, well baby visits. Well, they're nothing other than get your child vaccinated visits. And then come back because your child's going to now get sick even between those appointments. Vaccines are going to induce ear infections, allergies, asthma. Oh, now your kid is having seizures. All of these things will bring you back to the doctor for more pharmaceuticals and more doctor appointments, further enriching them, and then those will create more side effects. That drug is giving your child, you know, hives, this and the other. Well, let's try these two. Or I love the commercials that say, if you're already on this one, but you're not seeing enough or you're getting this side effect, try adding this one or two. Well, that's what's happening when our kids are going to the pediatricians. First, they're getting all the vaccines, which we should probably stop even calling them that. They're invasive medical procedures. People just somehow equate vaccines with saline solution or something that couldn't possibly harm. They're invasive medical procedures. They pierce the skin. And they go deep intramuscular. Most of them are given intramuscularly, so that's deep in the muscle tissue, where then released are all of these ingredients that have no business in the human body at all, for which we have no nutritional need, and which are bypassing all the ways you would typically get sick anyway, through your nasal passages, your respiratory tract, your GI tract, right into a closed system that's not designed to handle any of those ingredients. So,
and they also, I want to mention one other thing to the audience, too, that I'm sure they're not aware of, is that the power they give these doctors, these pediatricians, the authority they give them to, you know, intimidate us and scare us, fear. But one thing that I learned through my experience is the labels, they can even change. Like, for instance, if a vaccinated child came in with a real bad cough, it would be called, you know, bronchitis. Whereas if my unvaccinated son or daughter you know, came in with the same exact cough, it would be diphtheria to them.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? They have the authority to do that.
Well, and they use vaccination status as a determinant. So if you've been vaccinated against tetanus, even if you come into my office and you are presenting with every sign and symptom of tetanus, I will not say that you have tetanus or treat you for tetanus. If you've been vaccinated against the measles and you come in with a rash that looks just like the measles, I will not call it measles. If you come in with that bad cough, but you've had the pertussis vaccine, like you said, I will not call it pertussis. So they use vaccination status as a determinant of what you may or may not have or how not to treat you. And I wrote an article. My articles can be found by going to ageofautism.com and on the home page, clicking on the special reports tab, and then you'll see a drop down of most of my work. And one of my articles is called Answer Not Relevant, and it is about doctors using vaccination status incorrectly with regard to their patients. So it's interesting you mentioned that. And I wanted to, since we're talking about pediatricians, I just read this morning, it's in the March 16th, 2019 edition of the AAP online newsletter, that at their recent annual leadership meeting, they came up with a list of their top 10 priorities for 2019. And their number one priority is the elimination across the country of religious exemptions to vaccination. So I hope that any listener who is still taking their child to see a pediatrician, which I would ask you to question in and of itself, unless that pediatrician does not have any vaccines in their office. But if you are, I would call and say, are you a member of the AAP? If they are a card-carrying, dues-paying member of the AAP who comes out with statements like that every year, trying to further restrict and or completely eliminate our right to refuse vaccinations, I would ask, why are you giving them your business? We need to drive them out of business by refusing to give them business. So that would be my suggestion.
And remember
that's
that
their
we
number
pay
one
them,
goal this year.
They don't pay us. We act like they pay us. And we could fire them. When my pediatrician, before I started, you know, really doing my own research like you did and realizing my baby girl was injured, when I told him that I was not going to vaccinate my son, he fired me. He basically said, you're no longer allowed to come back to this office, as if he's paying me.
Well,
we forget that we're hiring them.
Right. People need to view doctors as consultants. They are nothing more than consultants. You go to them, you pay, you tell them why you're there, and you ask their opinion, and you can take it or leave it. That's what ethical medicine is all about. The practice of ethical medicine. You can take or leave their advice. They are nothing more than consultants. And if you don't like their advice or don't agree with it, turn around and walk out. And if they're going to fire you, you don't want a doctor who has that type of prideful arrogance and ego anyway.
Yeah.
So,
and
then I think we have to get into people facing their fears, because people fear not having a doctor. And so there is a real issue if you're in certain areas and you do want a doctor, and if the only doctor in town or within a 30-mile radius or the 10 doctors within a 30-mile radius are all the type who are going to kick you out if you don't fully comply with the CDC schedule or if you refuse to vaccinate, you know, you do have a bit of a problem on your hands if you want a doctor, but you can always go to urgent care. You might look into another type of doctor, like a family doctor. You might look into, I hate even using the term alternative practitioners, maybe we should start calling them preferred practitioners. Go see a homeopath. Go see a chiropractor. Go see a nutritionist. Do your own research. Become your own doctor. And then if there's a trauma or catastrophe or medical emergency, that's where you use urgent care. And I always even recommend urgent care over the hospital, because once you walk through those hospital doors with your child, you run the risk, especially if your child is unvaccinated or if you're not one who's going to comply with every demand of the doctor, you run the risk of having that doctor call Child Protective Services on you if you disagree with any of the recommendations. And it is happening more frequently across our country where CPS is called in because mom or dad does not want to agree with what the doctor is recommending, or they find out that the child is unvaccinated, and CPS gets called in. And then all of a sudden the state is given you know, guardianship of your child. So that's why I recommend first starting at urgent care. It's less likely to happen that way at urgent care. But ask yourself, why do you need a doctor, and who could you go to if indeed there was a medical emergency? What are alternatives to allopathic doctors that you might be interested in pursuing? What are alternative means of protecting, maintaining, and enhancing your family's health? Have you really studied nutrition? Don't listen to the USDA. That's these government regulatory agencies, and their recommendations for how to achieve health are usually the exact opposite. So if you're looking to learn more about nutrition, I highly recommend going to WAPF.org. That's the Weston A. Price Foundation organization. Learn about nutrition, because food is medicine, or it can be poison. So if you want to learn how food can enhance your family's health, study nutrition. Learn about essential oils. Learn about homeopathics. Learn about stress-free living. Learn about growing your own food so that you can control not having any poison on it or not having any genetically modified ingredients in it. And all of these things start to kind of build on one another and encourage you to do more research and pursue different areas of really ensuring your family's health and taking the matter into your own hands. And yes, there may always be a time where we have a medical emergency. You know, we have a compound fracture, we have a bone sticking out through our skin. I'm not saying we don't ever need doctors. I'm saying we way overuse them, and then there is such a high level of iatrogenic harm right now, and that is harm caused by doctors and nurses, which then requires more visits to see them. So it's this vicious, unending cycle. It's why we have little kids get vaccinated, then all of a sudden they're on a host of medicines. You know, they're on the EpiPen for allergies, they're on the inhaler for asthma, they're on insulin for type 1 diabetes, they're on attention drugs to increase their attention span at school, and they're on antibiotics because they're constantly ill. That is just a horrible treadmill to start your child on. So don't start them on it. Find out why the importance of breastfeeding and what's the healthiest diet you can eat when you're pregnant and nursing, and establish good health in your child from the get-go, from before you even conceive. And again, Weston A. Price Foundation has excellent information regarding that. We need to go back to health does not come through a pill, needle, or spray. It comes through sound food. Nutrient-dense food. It comes through a healthy lifestyle. That's activity, exercise, fresh air, sunshine. It comes through clean water, which, of course, our water supply is more contaminated than ever, but, you know, find a good water mm-hmm. filter. We use the big Berkey one at our house. Health comes through, it doesn't come through pharmaceuticals. And it's not easy. Like anything, it requires work. If you want to be a healthy individual, you can't do horrible things to your body Monday through Saturday and think some pill on Sunday is going to fix it. We're very into quick fixes instead of kind of daily, sound, wise choices. So we need to rethink how we're thinking about things. And I love to explain to people, too, that if our public health officials, if our legislators, if our medical professionals truly cared about public health like they claim to do, they wouldn't be pushing things like vaccinations. They'd be pushing breastfeeding campaigns. They'd be pushing hand-washing campaigns. They'd be pushing, you know, get outside, get away from your electronic devices, physical activity. They would be stressing the importance of getting those 8 hours of sleep every night. They would be talking about the importance of eating only organic food and why you wouldn't want to eat food that has been genetically modified or sprayed with poison, including glyphosate, which you mentioned earlier. These are the things which lead to good health. It's not pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceutical products, including vaccination 74 from in utero to 18 is what is now being recommended if women get vaccines, the 4 recommended vaccines while they're pregnant. That does not induce health, and it doesn't protect you against anything. It actually destroys your immune system so that it can't work to protect you against the illnesses it does encounter. And illnesses are not bad in and of themselves. We need to encounter a few in our childhood to develop a strong and robust immune system, but we need to encounter them and contract them naturally at the appropriate times. So with vaccines, now we're making people vulnerable at their most vulnerable ages. We're making infants vulnerable because we've destroyed mother's immunity through her own vaccination. She's not passing on the immunity she used to pass on in the womb and through breast milk to her baby. We're making older people more vulnerable. We mess with the immune system in youth, and then they contract things which they were vaccinated against in their youth. They contract them in their teenage years, like mumps, or in their adulthood, when they're far more serious and dangerous. We have a lot of illnesses, and they're illnesses, they're not diseases, that have historically been contracted in childhood and lead to a more robust system, immune system. But we are destroying what is natural and doing things artificially, and we should know by now. When you tamper with that which is natural and do all of these artificial things, it usually doesn't end well, and we're seeing that in spades.
Absolutely. And we're not even taking into consideration generational vaccine damage. I mean, they've been vaccinating since the late 1700s. So, you know, passed down from grandparents and great-grandparents.
Yes.
That's that, you know, genetic weakness type of thing. On top of everything else they've given.
Absolutely. We are seeing that. I'm seeing that even in the friends of my children who are now having children. So even when they're making really wise choices, they're having a very healthy pre-pregnancy diet, and they're avoiding toxins as best they can, and they're eating nutrient-dense, non-toxic foods as best they can, and they're having home births, and they're eschewing all medical products and interventions, all that is standard of care if you have a baby in a hospital. They are saying no to all of that. They're saying no to vaccines. And some of their children are still having some issues, and it is that. And I explain, well, you and your husband were both fully vaccinated according to the CDC schedule. And that damage gets transferred on. You know, your DNA has been altered. You may be heavy metal toxic. Those poisons get trapped in you, and they're passed on when you are pregnant. So it is intergenerational, and we're foolish to think otherwise. We have got to start utilizing our common sense. If we poison ourselves,
there's a
our
great
children
book I want to mention
get...
real fast. I want to mention a book that I remember reading years ago called Horrors of Vaccinations. Have you ever read that?
I've not read that particular one.
It's by Josh Higgins. It was written years ago. Years, I don't remember the exact year, but way long time ago, 100 years ago. And showing pictures of the damage that they were doing even back then. So imagine now that there's so many more and so much more poison.
Right. It just doesn't take a rocket scientist.
Right.
You just have to utilize your common sense, your maternal instincts, and the basic science that you learned, you know, through eighth grade. And just like a five-year-old could tell you, if you ask them, do you want to eat the apple that has been sprayed with poison or the one that hasn't been? A five-year-old can tell you that. You know, someone in eighth grade, younger, could tell you, is it going to make a person healthy to inject them with things that we know cause cancer, that are poisonous, that cause brain damage, that cause inflammation and toxicity, the two worst things for a developing infant, that impair sterility and future reproduction? Is it smart to inject people with any of those types of ingredients? Does that sound like a good way to achieve health? And even probably a five-year-old could tell you, no, don't do that. Don't hurt the baby that way. And I want to just comment on vaccine mandates. I know we're running out of time, but I want people to think of vaccine mandates. Is that all right if we skip to mandates for a quick minute before our time runs out?
I would love that. I was actually going to ask you for another show because we haven't even touched on that, and I really wanted your input.
Well, I just want to say
so
a couple things about them. You can't, first and foremost, you can't have medical mandates in a free and ethical society. If you're mandating something, then you're taking away liberty. You're no longer a free society. And you can't practice, medicine can't be practiced ethically in the presence of medical mandates. If you need to always, ethical medicine includes that the patient has prior, completely voluntary and fully informed consent. If you can't opt out, then the doctor isn't practicing ethical medicine.
And that's so, where it's headed right now. I know in Oregon, and we'll talk about this. Like right. I said, I'd love to invite you to another show to discuss what they're up to currently that people need to be aware of. And I'm sure you've done your homework, and I'd love to hear everything you know about it.
Yeah, well, these vaccine mandates, what they are resulting in is the government restricting and prohibiting law-abiding citizens and their mm-hmm. children from participating in society due to their That's refusal right. to submit to one, some, or scores of invasive, risk-laden, potentially fatal, improperly tested, unethically approved medical procedures for which That's no right. one who makes or administers them is legally, financially, or criminally liable. So think about that. These mandates make it so that a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen can't participate in society. They can't utilize daycare. They can't send their child to school. They might not be able to send their child to camp or now to college or their child...
Or even get a driver's license. It's not just
get a driver's license soon. Or many occupations now, there are vaccine requirements. And so that is restricting and prohibiting law-abiding citizens from fully participating in society.
We're going to continue a whole other show on this. We have ran out of time right now, Laura, and I just can't even begin to tell you how much I honor and respect you and just thank you for being a voice for these voiceless victims. And we'll talk about, you know, what your schedule is up so we can get more into what they're doing for both children and adults in Oregon. They're trying to mandate all across the nation. They're starting with Oregon. Very important subject we must, you know, make people aware of. So let's talk about that. And I'm going to do the closing statement, Laura. And any final words from you, sweetheart?
I just hope that anyone who wants to learn more will go to ageofautism.com, click on special reports, and watch my two presentations, two 80-minute comprehensive vaccine-related presentations. The first one is Why Is This Legal? It's at the top of the list. If you scroll down a little, the second one is titled Weston A. Price Foundation Speech. If you watch those two presentations, I guarantee you it will help convince you why you would never want to permit a vaccine for yourself, your child, or a loved one, and it will give you the reasons why so you can share that information with others.
Thank you, Laura, so much, and we'll talk soon. You're listening to Vic Fellowship, and our shows can be accessed on the front page of our website on the belly of a little boy flexing his muscles. We're on every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Our contact number is 800-939-8227. Again, if you have any questions about today's show, just call the voicemail line 862-800-6805. Leave your name, your question, and let them know it's for our What in the Cell is Going On show. We thank Progressive Radio Network for allowing us to give you this uncompromised truth, and y'all bless.